Now, we're also followed by a professor joining us live again, Alexei Muravyev, joining us now. He's the Associate Professor of National Security and Strategic Studies at Curtin University. Thank you so much, Professor, for joining us. You just heard our correspondent speaking to us, affirming, or rather being very confident, that it is pointing towards a full-blown invasion, especially with Putin just announcing a special military operation. But he says that he has no plans to occupy Ukraine. What do you think about this?
Look, I think the Russians obviously want to neutralize the threat, and something that they made it very clear before. The scale of the operation seems to be a bit surprising, though. If it is confirmed that the Russians may have resorted to an amphibious assault, and that means that they're trying to cut Ukraine off any forms of supply that may come to the country externally. So by possibly blocking Ukraine's main seaports, such as Odessa, such as Mariupol, and others, the Russians actually trying to cut Ukraine off or inflict both economic damage, but also create a sense of encirclement. In terms of full-scale occupation, again, it very much depends on what sort of force the Russians are prepared to move into the country, because the size of the force that they have assembled in the vicinity of Ukrainian border will not give them sufficient edge in terms of occupying Ukraine or even large parts of Ukraine. This force is designed to crash the Ukrainian military in border regions, especially on the line of confrontation between Ukrainian forces and pro-Russian separatists, but it's not sufficient to take control over larger parts of Ukraine. So it would very much depend on what sort of resources the Russians may commit. They may just resort to the Georgia approach when they moved in forces to some key areas, then they resorted to surgical strikes, create some sort of aimed at creating demoralizing effect, disrupt command and control communications and intelligence networks. And I think this is what's happening with cyber offensive, and actually expect either for the Ukrainians to start surrendering or negotiating truce on Russia's terms.
Well, the building tensions and threats seem to be showing otherwise, with Putin saying that he can't tolerate Ukraine's threats. What threats exactly is he referring to then?
Well, it's a mix of threats, because the Ukrainian politicians in months prior to this new state of confrontation were making all sorts of, I think, ill-worded claims that they want chunks of Russian territory. They believe that they wanted to seize parts of, say, Russia's Krasnodar region, believing, which is geographically adjusted to southern parts of Ukraine, believing that was historically Ukrainian. Obviously, he is referring to Russia's perception that Ukrainian forces were trying to restore territorial integrity by seizing areas of Luhansk and Donetsk by force, and these are areas are now widely populated by Russian nationals, because the Russians were giving them passports, and over 770,000 locals are technically Russian nationals, Russian passport holders, and I think that certainly the final tipping point that the Russians used as an excuse was the speech made by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the Munich Security Conference at the past weekend, in which he actually made a reference saying Ukraine should really be considering the option of reacquiring nuclear weapons capability. And this is what the Russians have used as an excuse to simply say, we're not going to see Ukraine militarizing, and we're not going to see Ukraine acquiring nuclear weapons capability given the current state of hostilities between the two countries. So I think Putin certainly used that speech as a form of justification for him to move in and effectively strip Ukraine of any capacity that would allow it to pose any threats to Russian security. And that would be the Kremlin's perspective, obviously.
Now, you were mentioning about the size of the troops being held over there. We are hearing lots coming in, and one of it is where the Russian forces are preparing to probably, you know, take over a major airport in Kiev, so that, as you said, perhaps for the next move being surgical strikes. Now, how do you think that, how practical do you think is, how fast can this escalate in? And do you think that this can be a strategy that Russia is really moving forward towards?
Look, I mean, we need to understand that Russia is not some sort of technologically backward force. There is a lot of talk about Russian tanks moving across the plains, et cetera, et cetera. But the Russians have been practicing and readying themselves for high-tempo operations, air mobile operations, their airborne troops, they're one of the key shock elements equivalent to U.S. Marines, are pretty advanced. So the Russians can execute swift operations deep inside Ukrainian territory without much problem, also because the Air Force would almost guarantee them air superiority, and they would be able to overcome Ukrainian air defenses simply because they continue to operate Soviet-era aging equipment. The Russians obviously have highly skilled special operations forces, which got a lot of practice in Syria, operating behind enemy lines. So in terms of staging special incursion operations, I think the Russians would be able to execute them swiftly. But it's a matter of, okay, you land on the, in the airport, what's next? Are they going to use it as a staging point to land more, bring more troops in? Or will they simply want to neutralize the airport by, for example, damaging or destroying the airstrip? So it very much depends what sort of Russian objectives are. If the objectives is simply to deny Ukraine opportunity to exercise any form of maneuvering, force maneuvering, they may resort may limit their strengths to attacking command posts, army barracks, army depots, ammunition depots, etc., and obviously create this sense of shock and awe by trying to demoralize the Ukrainian military, given the fact that the Ukrainian government just began calling on reservists, but reservists are not necessarily combat-ready troops. And for them to come under aerial bombardment, to come under artillery bombardment, or any sort of direct military pressure may be psychologically hard to digest. So I think the Russians may try to actually inflict as much fear and confusion in the mindsets of the Ukrainian military and effectively demoralize them with an objection of achieving military victory without necessarily inflicting or sustaining heavy casualties. Because it's also important to remember that even though the state of Russia-Ukraine relations is so tense, but mentally, psychologically, I think it's still a massive step, a massive shift for both the Ukrainians and the Russians to fight each other, leave alone kill each other, given centuries of coexistence, given centuries of interaction at all sort of levels, including very personal, very intimate levels.
Well, Ukraine is not a member of NATO and is expected to be really on its own in terms of fighting forces. And just earlier, President Joe Biden released a statement saying that, you know, they want to respond in a decisive manner. Do you then see the U.S. or any other Western country stepping in this case?
No. I think it was made very clear that the United States will not fight for Ukraine, and I think that in itself is an element of deception, because certainly a lot of opinion polls held in Ukraine months prior to this unfolding tragedy was demonstrating that Ukrainians were really hopeful that the Americans will not let them down, that the Americans will shoulder them in times of like this. And but again, you know, Ukraine may be important for the United States politically and geopolitically in terms of creating a containment area for Russia. But the United States' capacity right now is really stretched. The Ukraine crisis has demonstrated the shortfall of the U.S. superpower when the United States military are really struggling to contain China in our part of the world, in the Pacific, and then commit substantial resources to defending NATO. And as you said just a moment ago, Ukraine is not part of NATO's jurisdiction. Even if it would have been part of NATO's jurisdiction, I would still be a bit skeptical that the United States would be prepared to commit to fight a military superpower, because this is something that the United States military haven't done since the end of the Second World War. Again, fighting contingencies in Iraq, in Afghanistan, is not exactly the same as taking on the Russian army.
Now, we've been speaking a lot about Russia and how it's technologically advanced. What about Ukraine? Because President Zelensky actually warned Russia, in fact, triggering President Vladimir Putin to be very wary of that threat itself, that we will defend themselves. Do you think Ukraine can defend itself against what's this whole escalating situation that's ongoing right now?
Well, Ukraine can certainly put on stiff resistance. There's been a lot of injection of resources in the Ukrainian military since the outbreak of crisis back in 2014. The Ukrainian military is a different look military compared to the way how they were 7 years ago. They gained combat experience by fighting and confronting pro-Russian separatists over the past 7 years. But we need to remember, engaging in counterinsurgency operations or counterterrorism operations is not exactly the same as confronting a technologically advanced military force. And I think the Ukrainians find it incredibly difficult to operate against a superior force, which is highly motivated, highly trained, best equipped, and ready to go in, because the Russians just completed a series of large-scale exercises, which can also be viewed as a precursor for real combat action. So their troops are well coordinated. They're in the field. They all achieve all the jointness with all the different elements of different fighting services. And the Ukrainian army, whilst also being partially mobilized and were engaged in military exercises, is certainly not in the same state. They continue to operate, by and large, an aging Soviet military equipment. There are serious questions concerning the training of their officer corps, because there's been a lot of cleansing of the old officer corps, which was educated in Russia or in Soviet military establishments in fear of their sympathy towards Russia. A lot of new generation officers were trained in NATO educational establishment, and not trying to be disrespectful to NATO or Western defense educational establishments, but the trend in those establishments of the past couple of decades was to emphasize on asymmetric warfare, on countering guerrilla operations. The Western military were very dismissive of the prospect of a state-to-state conflict, including confrontation with a major power, and the Ukrainian military may be paying the price as a result of that. And the final comment that's important to make, as I said before, Ukraine just called in for partial mobilization of their reservists, but enlisting reservists and by that expanding numerically combat units doesn't necessarily mean you have an effective force. They need to go through the period of training, through the period of adaptation. And if they would be thrown into battle right now with a superior force, with a force that is better trained, better equipped, and mentally ready, it may be a massive challenge for them. So either they will sustain heavy casualties and fight until the last person, or they may get demoralized. But I think one of the core factors that need to be taken into account here, that even though the Ukrainian military was trying to divorce themselves from the Soviet legacy and the Soviet past, I think one of the key features that they have retained from that Soviet military legacy is the morale factor. And that the morale factor, the will to resist, the will to defend the country, may be the key determinant for the Ukrainian military to put on stiff resistance, not necessarily win the war, but certainly take a lot of punishment and inflict considerable punishment on the Russian military. So if the Ukrainian military will retain this morale, that may become the most effective weapon in terms of deterring the aggression.
Well, we've been speaking and monitoring this situation for the past few days, and Russia has always been denying that, you know, consistently denying and maintaining that Russia has no intention of invading Ukraine. But whatever's happening right now seems to be depicting, or rather painting, a very different picture. Why do you think Russia is taking the steps that is currently happening right now? And do you think that moving forward, the intention was really to take over or invade Ukraine, and probably Vladimir Putin was waiting for a chance, taking chance at what Zelensky was saying, that, you know, threatening, and this is a chance to step in.
Look, I think perhaps the Russians made up his mind, because when you prepare a major operation, it takes weeks and weeks of preparation. It cannot happen overnight. You can give orders overnight and you can start executing orders within hours, but the operational planning, the logistical enabler has to be prepared and carefully planned in advance. You need to undertake reconnaissance, you need to undertake intelligence gathering, you need to undertake target acquisition. And again, this is a long process. So I think the Russians were ready for the worst case scenario. And it's, again, the fight for Ukraine is not about Ukraine. It's not about controlling the territory. It's more about Russia not wasting any time in its ongoing strategic negotiations about national security in the European context, something that they have put forward to the Americans as an ultimatum back in late December, something that they failed to get satisfactory answer from either NATO or the United States. And the Russians were looking for an excuse with regards to the situation in Ukraine. So I think the final tipping point, or at least the excuse that the Russians have used, was this Munich speech by Zelensky, in which he kind of basically flagged the idea that Ukraine may become a nuclear power once again, because that would ensure, you know, Ukraine's territorial integrity and independence. So I think that, I mean, if Putin was looking for an excuse, well, Zelensky provided him with that perfect excuse, plus obviously the escalation of fighting along the border between the Ukrainian forces and the separatist forces. It just created this perfect situation when the Russians decided to move in. Also, they were psychologically prepared to accept sanctions and work under sanctions. So the sanctions could also be viewed as a trigger point, because Russian perspective prior to this climax in the current crisis was we would come under sanctions one way or another. What are we going to lose? So it's better to go and grab something we wanted for a long time rather than wait and be hopeful that the West will play nice and will be tolerant, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the Russians just going with this because they are trying to avoid not repeating what they describe as their mistakes back in 2014 when they had ideal opportunity to grab more of Ukraine, so the eastern parts of Ukraine. But at that time, after the next in Crimea, they decided not to proceed in hope that they would avoid tougher sanctions. These tougher sanctions were introduced to the Russians back then. So, and I think since then, the Kremlin was regretful of its sort of halfway Ukraine approach from 2014. So 7 years later, they look for an opportunity, and now they're trying to rectify what they haven't finished, or finish the job that they haven't finished 7 years ago.
Now, as we're speaking, so much is happening with, you know, Ukraine kind of like introducing martial law on all the territories of state, and Biden, Zelensky speaking over a phone. While all this is happening, what do you think, you know, Putin's next move will be?
Well, he will need to finish this operation quickly. He needs to make sure that this operation will result in minimum fatalities, certainly on Russia's side and also on the Ukrainian side, because he wouldn't want to go down in history as the kill of Slavs, because that's a big psychological thing for anyone who is of Slavic origin. So he will try to do it swiftly. He will try to do it with minimal effort and maximum output, again, because he wants probably to go back to negotiations table with Western leaders as a victor. Yes, he will be viewed as an aggressor, but I think he is prepared to accept this. But he doesn't want this war to become a long and protracted conflict. He wants it to be finished quickly. He wants results now, if not yesterday. So it would very much depend on the next move by the Ukrainian government and the level of resistance that Ukrainian forces would be able to mount. If they would be able to withstand the initial Russian assault, and they will be able to turn this conflict into protracted conflict, then it would certainly be something that would make Putin rethink down the track. But if Putin's swift assault will achieve desirable outcomes, which I described earlier, then we would obviously enter the second phase, which would be some sort of military de-escalation. Yes, a lot of political hype about it, but also attempts to create some sort of a political resolution out of the current strategic debacle.
Now, just in, Ukrainian Interior Ministry just reported hundreds of casualties from Russian missile attacks. I'm just wondering, things have been escalating and the crisis is here. Do you still think that diplomacy is still on the table?
Look, I think even in the worst years of previous wars, diplomacy was still making efforts and attempts to work. It depends whom you're going to talk to. I don't think there's going to be any opportunity to have any sort of political discussions between Moscow and Kyiv right this moment. But I'm pretty sure the European capitals, the United States, will try to mediate some sort of outcome for the Europeans, but also for the Ukrainians and the Europeans, as well as for the rest of the world, because the other thing we need to be mindful of, whilst we see this tragedy unfolding in Eastern Europe, I think a lot of strategists and planners will be also sort of thinking, will China try to seize on this moment and do something in our part of the world? And obviously the Americans would be really mindful and worry about possible moves by the Chinese, who may use this opportunity to take their advantage. This is something that may also compel them trying to find a way out of this tragedy sooner than later. So in case if China will start making moves, the American government would then concentrate all their efforts on protecting and defending Asia.